So my seventh grade science teacher's name was Mr. Pfeiffer, and he was like an old elephant. He had ginormous ears and a ginormous head, and he moved really slow, but he talked even slower. I mean, this is like every stereotype coming true, right? And when he called on your name, he would have this long drawl, and he would just sort of slowly turn his huge torso, and he would barely look you in the eye. And it was like, oh my. And the talk was so slow. I mean, it was just like just inviting you to sleep every time. And the invitation to sleep came with, he was a classic like lecturer type of teacher. There was never going to be an illustration. There was never going to be a question. It was just purely material. You know, just get that crank that science material into them. So Mr. Pfeiffer. The other thing about Mr. Pfeiffer that's just terrible was he had one of those pocket protectors, which is, if you haven't lived in Nerdville, apparently it protects your pens from like soaking into your nice shirts. I have no idea what this is about. But these pocket protectors, he actually had a toothpick in his. And during his lectures, he would just take out his toothpick while he was just middle talking. Nobody sat in the front rows. Nobody. So the other thing that he did was he had the most bushy eyebrows ever. Like, he needed a comb to figure out these eyebrows. But then his hair, he had like the three strands. And he would just take, whenever they kind of like danced with him a little bit, whenever the hair kind of picked up, he would just pull it back over to the comb over, right? Mr. Pfeiffer, an old elephant. So if you're a 13-year-old boy, he was just perfect to pick on, right? And I remember that the kid who sat next to me, he slowly sort of took the back of the pen out with his tooth, and then he removed the ink part, and then he took like a piece of paper and the little 2-inch by 2-inch, and he put it in his mouth. And then he sort of put this spitball into the gun, and I'm on the edge of my seat, right? I'm in seventh grade, and something is about to go down with Mr. Pfeiffer. And all of a sudden, before you know it, just this whirl, bam, smashes, goes right past Mr. Pfeiffer's big old ear and smashes the back of the whiteboard, right? And it was like, from that moment on, it was like AD to BC, right? It was like a turning point in the class's history. And it was spitball heaven, I'm not gonna lie. These whirling spitballs were coming everywhere because, if you remember, Mr. Pfeiffer can't see real well, he can't move real well, he did not notice. He didn't notice. And so there's these whirring spitballs just flying at the board, right? Remember, seventh grade. And the class is like, we're into it because when the option is listening to the lecture or doing something active, what are teenagers gonna pick, right? And so spitball upon spitball, but something fascinating happened. As I confess to you that I had to be all in because that's my personality. So I was one of the class's best saliva snipers, okay? And when I shot him, every once in a while, like, they wouldn't miss his head, they would hit his head. Okay? And this is terribly sad. I understand this. And this is what he would do. So he can't see the saliva bombs going on him, but he felt them when they hit his head, right? And he would throw like an elephant temper tantrum, like stomping his feet and stammering and stuttering. And finally, he would just like scream at the class. But the funny part is he couldn't real see, he couldn't real move, so no one ever got in trouble. So spitballs just continued, right? And every once in a while, they were actually encouraged by this little elephant temper tantrum, right? Where he would go crazy. And then after he was like over the tantrum, he'd go right back into lecture. Just pick up right where he left off. And so I confess to you the deep shame of torturing my seventh grade science teacher for an entire year. And it was interesting because when I would leave the classroom and kind of look at the wall, this whiteboard, I mean, it was like caked in like 100 spitballs, right? And this poor man was tortured by 13-year-olds and never did anything about it. And so I admit that, like, when I would get in my like sniper's pose and it would hit him in the head, I admit that I had this like this dual sense in me of like excitement and deep shame because I knew this was wrong. And so to the kids here today, like, I knew that these spitballs were wrong. And I know I should not have done them, right? And especially to my son today here. And so I wondered, this sort of led me to think about a couple questions. Why did we do this? I mean, this was like a class secret agent activity. We were all into it. And was it simply because we were a bunch of little dirty, rotten seventh grade sinners? And why did I keep reloading and shooting spitball upon spitball? And so I wonder if you have ever had an experience of doing something that you knew like really harmed somebody. And you kept doing it, and you kept doing it. Or I wonder if you have been on the other end, the receiving end of someone's meanness, right? Of just pure just terribleness. And you received a spitball upon a spitball. And so family therapists, they talk about the human life as being an iceberg. That only 10% of an iceberg is up top. 90% of what makes up an iceberg is below the surface. So all of our thoughts, our actions, all of who we are, our family backgrounds, our histories, they're all underneath the surface. And then occasionally that top percent comes out, right? And these therapists teach us that there are two predominant questions every human being is asking underneath the surface. And we ask this question over and over again, and whatever our family histories are so important in this, we ask, am I loved and am I safe? And then our answer to this question determines a whole lot about us. So when we answer, when we are loved, when we are not loved and we are not safe, it sort of leads to pain and shame and hiding. And it leads to like us developing these advanced coping mechanisms like spitballs, right? So we take all that pain and shame of not being loved and not being safe, and then we hurl it at someone else. And this is what I like to call the rhythm of pain. Spitball upon spitball, right? And this is it's phenomenal, right? And you see this in every one of us. All those places from our past where we felt unloved and unsafe, we have incredible coping mechanisms. So if you're not a spitballer, you learn other ways. You learn to be smart mouth, right? You learn to compare with others. You learn deep patterns of hiding and shame and inauthenticity, right? And so this hiding comes out again. And even when we are doing, when we are hurting others, it's us who are truly hurting, lacking the love, lacking the safety that we all needed as kids. But there's hope. Many of us have felt loved and have felt safe, or at least had periods and times of it, right? And this leads to deep connection with people. It leads to peace. It leads to vulnerability. It leads to authenticity. This is what I call the rhythm of peace. And so warring inside of us at all times is the rhythm of pain and the rhythm of peace. And our family of origins, our history gets invoked in certain ways, and we hide and we do shameful things, and we act out in these coping mechanisms. But when we find love and safety, we're able to be our best self. We're able to find peace and vulnerability and authenticity. And this is why it's so important in the church that we learn to talk honestly with each other, right? We learn to talk about our wounds and our hurts and all those things, because this makes possible the rhythm of peace within each one of us. And this is a powerful and beautiful thing. And so my question for us today is, how can all of us live more consistently into that rhythm of peace? Because the reality is, even if you had a really great childhood, you know what I mean when I talk about the rhythm of pain. You have felt what it feels like to feel unsafe and insecure, and you notice your own actions and coping mechanisms within that. And so how do we learn to think about that rhythm of pain, to stop it, and to say yes more consistently to that rhythm of peace? How do we stop the hiding that we all do with one another and be more authentic, be more vulnerable? Jesus tells this story in the Gospel of Matthew, and what's fascinating, it's not told in any other gospel story. And the story is about a king. And this king decides that he needs to settle accounts in the village, and he comes down to his kingdomhood, and he begins to settle accounts with the servants. The first servant he runs into owed him 10,000 talents, which is 200,000 years of wages. Now, if you're hearing the story from, this is originally told probably in Aramaic or Hebrew, and we read this story today and we miss some of the point, but this is 200,000 years of yearly wages, which is equal to billions of dollars. So the king comes down, he meets a servant who owes him billions of dollars. And as the story goes, the servant bows before him. Of course, if you owe anyone $1 billion, what are you going to do, right? You bow before him. You ask for pardon. You tell him you'll pay him back when you can. And then this fascinating thing happens in the story of Jesus, right? The king, the one with the most honor, the best reputation in the land, shows deep compassion for the man, forgives him his debt, takes the debt and wipes it away. Clear slate. You're clear to do business wherever you are. You are forgiven entirely. And then the movement of the story, movement two of the story, this man with a clear slate walks down into the village and he meets another man who owed him 100 denarii. 100 denarii is 4 months of wages, so thousands of dollars to us. And so you're getting this setup here, right? Jesus is about to take us on this storytelling adventure because he's so good. This man was just forgiven billions of dollars. He comes upon a man who owes him thousands of dollars. Same thing. The man bows before him, tells him, give me time. I can pay this off if you give me time. And this man, the man who has just forgiven many, strangles the man, demands that he pays him, has him thrown in prison, which in this world, being thrown in prison means he can't work. It means that this rhythm of pain now not only affects the man, but the man's family. He can't provide food for his children. And so you have this, in the first part of the story, you have this rhythm of peace. All this hard stuff, whatever happened, you are forgiven. It is done. And then the very same man, the rhythm of pain. And then the story has a third movement to it. All of a sudden, people in the village start talking, right? Like people do. And the people in the village, you can just imagine their banter, right? That dude got forgiven billions, and he can't even forgive the thousands. I mean, what kind of guy is that? So the king hears about this. The king comes down once again and is upset, right? Angry. He forgave this man. This man couldn't forgive this man. And the man, the servant who is forgiven, can give no answer. And the story gives us no answer. And it makes me just really ponder the question of why didn't the servant pass on this experience of forgiveness? So this servant, he had learned a way of living, a way of believing that was not unlike our spitball upon spitball, right? He had learned that for him to get ahead in this world meant that he was excruciatingly mean and hard to all the other servants to get back all that he had been owed. But then the king introduced a new way of being human, and it must have been shocking. It must have been shocking that everything you had learned in your past is now needs to be new. And so this servant, he's forgiven, but then it's like he comes to the business, he's back into his business rhythm, right? He's like, no, I know how this works in the business world. You owe me, you're going to prison. But the king, at the end of the passage, says, have the man tortured, I don't want to see him again, and it's dramatic, heightened language, and we're like, oh, wow. But then there's this one phrase, this beautiful phrase. It says, all of you will be like this servant if you don't learn to forgive your brothers and sisters from your heart. And so this is what Jesus does. He tells us this elaborate story, and then all of a sudden he gives us the one-liner. And Jesus said, what Jesus has come to do is to set into motion in this world this rhythm of peace, this rhythm that stops the hiding, allows us to be authentic and vulnerable and honest with one another. And so from the heart is what Jesus said. And so we learn a couple things here. And what we have to kind of get clear on is, what does forgiveness mean, right? Because what exactly does it mean to forgive? And so I've written that the act of forgiveness is the essential letting go that stops the rhythm of pain and starts the rhythm of peace. So simply, forgiveness is the sense of letting it go. But that has the effect of stopping this rhythm stops the spitballs, and it starts something new. And so that's important because then we learn what forgiveness is not. And a lot of us can mess this up in our mind. Forgiveness is not condoning reckless behavior, right? Spitballs to your teacher's forehead, not very smart, Dale, right? That's not going to get me out of the principal's office, right? Forgiveness does not resolve all situations, and that is incredibly hard. We aren't always reconciled with someone. It stirs and it burns in our hearts, and what we have to learn to let it go, or it just eats us alive, right? And forgiveness does not erase consequences. Some of us have been painfully hurt by the actions of others. This doesn't erase those consequences. And then lastly, this doesn't forget the broken boundaries, right? There are people in our world who are unhealthy, or through seasons of their life can become unhealthy, right? Forgiveness is just letting go. But it's not forgetting. That's a weird concept that we have, right? The concept is you can forgive. You can let go of that person. You can choose to act in this rhythm of peace, but that doesn't mean you forget that there were some boundaries broken. That doesn't mean you would, if they stole your car, you wouldn't let them take your car again, right? I mean, that's just silly, right? So, but forgiveness is about letting go. And so this story, that very last line, everything becomes clear. In this story, God is like the king. God is the king who has deep compassion for us humans, forgives us all, and lets us go, and shows us how to live into the rhythm of peace. But we, especially me, we are like the servant who offers spitball upon spitball. So it's jarring, right? It makes us think about it in a deeper way. Unless we become people who get into the rhythm of peace, who learn to live our lives in that rhythm instead of that same rhythm of pain and brokenness. So how do we do this? How do we live from the heart? How do we be these people of forgiveness? And I think it's amazing that the cross offers us this rhythm on display, right? So on the cross, the rhythm of pain is displayed par excellence, right? All of us were able to spit our spitballs to the best of us and heap them upon God. But this didn't stick, right? This rhythm of pain and betrayal and violence and heartache ends up in a resurrection. It ends up in all that pain gets taken and all that energy gets changed into. This whole story is not about the rhythm of pain. This is a story about the rhythm of peace. This is a story that invites human beings to get rid of the hiding, to be authentic, honest, and vulnerable, and show the world the love that it so desperately needs. So from the heart, that phrase means to us that to forgive as a Christian is central to Christian spirituality. It's vital for us. It is a sign of life or death. And so when we forgive from the heart, it's an opportunity for us to enter into deeper life. And when we hold back, and when we hold on, and when we enter that rhythm of pain upon pain, spitball upon pitball, we enter death. We slowly die. But when we choose to let go, we live, which is absolutely incredible. But how do we receive this forgiveness? How do we learn to receive it? How do we learn to share it? I found amazing this week that I started thinking about the Lord's Prayer. And there's that phrase in the Lord's Prayer, right? Forgive us our trespasses as we also forgive those who trespass against us. And that simple phrase. And Jesus asks us to pray this prayer daily. There's some Christians that pray it 3 times a day. There's some that pray it more. And so we're invited to bring all that heartache and all that pain, all those spitballs that have been thrown upon us and that we've thrown to prayer. And this is like genius of Jesus, right? Because when we bring this to prayer, it does 2 things. It reminds us of the mutual flow of forgiveness. As we experience this God's love and forgiveness daily, day in and day out, then we're able to extend that flow to others. So this is the forgiveness that has a mutual flow to it. This is all about us coming to this place of experiencing this God and giving that back. So this is what the servant was missing. He didn't let the billions of dollars that he was forgiven truly hit his heart, right? He was already back in the business world. And then secondly, this repetition of this prayer, like it almost gets, if I'm really honest, it almost gets monotonous, right? When we're saying the Lord's Prayer. If you were taught from your mom or from your dad or from your grandma or grandpa to say this prayer, there's a sense that it can lose its freshness, right? But however, it is incredibly important for us as human beings because it takes on new freshness through different seasons, through different periods, through different moments. And we learn in this prayer to take that it helps us in their grief process. So psychologists also teach us that when we are wounded, when the spitballs have been flown, that we have a range of emotions of anger and shock and resentment and fear. And so every day we bring ourselves back to this prayer. When we are dealing with someone who has pained us deeply, we say over and over again, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And it takes time. There are some wounds that each of us have had. There are some places where you've been unloved and unsafe that take years and years of saying this prayer. But we find this great love and we begin to take the next best step in our healing and in our Christian growth. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who have trespassed against us. And so I confess to you this morning that for a long time I lived with some deep shame over Mr. Pfeiffer. And truly seeing him throw this sort of elephant tantrum, it was hard. And it's sort of placed in my memory bank of like, I actually deeply hurt this man. And so as I was learning what it meant to be Christian and thinking about the vitality of forgiving from the heart, I started praying this prayer. And it started bringing up all this stuff with Mr. Pfeiffer. You start praying, your life starts changing. It's crazy, you know? And so I kept saying this prayer, and I kept not knowing the right step. And so I decided finally that I'd write a letter. Now, in this letter, I wrote it to him knowing that he had passed a long time ago, right? And so I just wrote this letter, and I just asked him to forgive me for all this pain that I inflicted upon him. And then I get to this point in the letter, and I say, and I promise you that what I want to do the rest of my life is live into the rhythm of peace and stop the rhythm of pain. And the only gift I can give you, Mr. Pfeiffer, is to live into the rhythm of peace. And so I ask you this morning, will you live for the rhythm of peace? And maybe you can take one step, just one step in our worship space with each other this morning, and join me as we repeat the prayer that Jesus taught us. So I want to invite you to stand right now, and let's say this prayer together. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.